Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for people who play with needles, thread, congress cloth, ground cloth, wire.
Stuff.
And stuff. Yeah, throw in the stuff. We got the stuff. Yes. And our guest this week, Diane Bertelson of Pepperberry Designs. Hi, Diane.
Hi, guys.
All right. From the Colorado area. Yes.
Yep.
So yes. We have counting you three time zones this week. This is almost spanning the country. It's very exciting. So okay, so we've got this thing here, a bio. It's kind of fun. Passion for needlepoint 15 years ago.
I probably should update that. That was probably 18 years now.
Okay, so 18 years now. A member of a charitable organization, design expertise and stitching efforts. All right, so we got to learn about that. You have a degree in graphic design. A true artist. professional creative experience at company Nestle, Eldon Rubbermaid, and then just a dedicated needle pointer, which is good. Canvas design. February 2013 was Pepperberry Design. So there we have it.
Right.
Kids. Gardner, yep. Gardner, I relate to you there. Floral arranger, there's the artist. Oh, and artist. And then you just went with artist, just in general. Yeah.
As if that was not captured prior.
Yeah, I think we have it. And then inspiration for needlepoint, color, textiles, holiday traditions, travel, family, and pets. Okay, yeah, that pretty much gets them all. So there we have it. There's Diane. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week. Yes.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
So now, 18 years ago, you started. So needlepoint or cross stitch, or how do you get started?
Well, it was needlepoint. Well, to go back a few years before that, quite a few.
Okay, so this bio is useless then, because it's 15 and then 18 and
Okay. That's right. I didn't want to write like a full dissertation on my life. So right. I actually was introduced to needlepoint by my mom, who she did knitting and sewing and crocheting, ceramics, crewel embroidery, you name it, she had done it. But she didn't do needlepoint, but for some reason she bought me a needlepoint kit. And so I did the kit, of course, at that point. It was just all basket weave. And right. I'm sure my basket weave was probably more continental than anything. I have no idea what I did. But, I finished it, and that was it. And I went on to the next thing because I was kind of like my mom. I do a lot of different things. And then and the reason I know it was 18 years ago, it's because my daughter had just been born. And I joined this charitable organization that I had to be a part of a committee. And so I'm looking at the list and I see needlepoint tree skirt. And I'm like, cool, I can do that. And let's see, that means I'll be doing it mostly at home because I now have a 2-year-old. And I think by the time we started it, she was 3 months. And, home is good. Meetings are, a pain. So I got on that committee, and each one of us had a gore of this. I think there were, were there 8 of them? I think there were 8 gores to this. So it was a 6-foot tree skirt. So each of us had a pretty big panel, and I would put her in her little bouncy seat and I would stitch. So, and that was it. I mean, I got bitten by the bug, and I haven't stopped ever since. So, so that's how I got into needlepoint story.
What's that like doing? I've never done it. What's that like doing a group thing like that where everybody has a panel? Do you feel pressure to measure up, or do you just stitch your part and be done with it? It seems like a weird dynamic that goes on there.
Well, so the person who had designed it, she had drawn it out onto, I think it was 13 mesh at the time. And she gave us the fibers and we knew where everything was supposed to go. So they all went together. So it was, you know, I didn't feel any pressure. I guess I was just doing my thing. Maybe everybody else did, but the funny thing is that next year I was the one who headed up that particular committee. So technically that was when I did my first design. My first design was a 6-foot needlepoint tree skirt. How about that?
Way to go, low key. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, being a graphic designer, it was like, oh, okay, well, you know, I had my idea. I did it in Illustrator and I, you know, did this big, you know, 6-foot drawing essentially, and had a blueprint place run it off so I could put the panels on top of it and draw it on. So, you know, it was right up my alley.
Right.
That's actually a really cool way to do it, you know, because then it's a unified thing for all of them.
Right. So it was fun.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and that's a real advantage to be able to know how to use Illustrator and do a design like that. That's a real plus.
True.
Or, you know, being able to draw, you know, little things like that.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that art background really comes in handy.
Yeah. So were you doing, graphic design at all these corporate companies too?
Right. So when I got out of school, I started at an ad agency when computers were just coming out. So when I was in school, all our graphic design was totally by hand. And I worked there and got used to, you know, the computers. And of course, as they evolved, you know, I went to different places. So I was the package designer for an office products company, which eventually merged with Rubbermaid. And then after that, I was in package design at Nestle. And so it's you know, you just kind of learn as you go. You know, nowadays kids can learn all that stuff in school. So
yeah, back in those days, to be able to do computer graphic design, that was powerful. That was powerful capability. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I went to school in the dark ages, so.
But package design is really fun.
Oh, I love it. I love three-dimensional. I really love three-dimensional work. So. I had like an environmental design class in college, and it was all, you know, three dimensional, and that I just thrive in that. So yeah. And now I'm sort of designing in, well, it's two dimensional, but three dimensional at some point. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So then what makes you leave the corporate world? Kids? I've had enough of it. I'm out of here.
Well, truth be told, it was probably part of that. But my husband and I at that point we met about a year before I left Nestle, and I left because we moved. We moved from Southern California up to Central California. So, and then kids and, you know, just everything kept going. And then one day I woke up and I'm like, okay, so my kids are getting older. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
Cause I have to do something. Yeah. So
I love that. I love that. Anybody who's raised kids, we did this and this and this, we got married, we had this, and then kids. And that, you know, there's a 20 year span there. And then, yes.
That's right.
Yeah. And then kids.
That's right. That's right. I'm sure my kids probably had wished that I decided to start this a little bit later in their life. I guess my oldest was probably, had just started high school when I started doing this. So, you know, it's, and then my youngest was, oh gosh, he was still in grade school. So, you know, a little, you know, it can be a little challenging trying to balance it all, but, you know, in the end, I'm happy, they're happy.
There is something to be said for having something to do besides mother, you know. I found, you know, when I was working, I think I became a better parent because I had something else to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I do.
It gives your brain a little, you know, a little bit of a stretch in a different direction.
Right.
And then when you come back to your child, you actually have something to bring back.
Right. And then some occasional guilt for feeling like you're working too much.
Yes. But then you turn that guilt into, you know, very intensive parenting. And then that's actually a good thing.
That's right.
Oh. Hang in there, Diane. Christine will get you through all this.
Okay, so you can give me your phone number after this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, for me, it was, I had to work. There was no choice. So, you know, it was tough, but it was exactly that. I found that after the months and months of feeling like, you know, I was abandoning my child, I realized that, A, he really didn't care because he had lots and lots of friends and he was doing way cooler things than I could provide for him.
Right.
B, I was getting to be an adult and doing my own thing. And then I was coming back and being, you know, a more attentive parent because I was there. And, you know, I'd satisfied my need to, you know, be intellectually stimulated and to have my own sort of group of friends and things like that. So, yeah, right. I think it's great. And it is time consuming. And as I sit here and my son is in his room and you know, he's in that 14-year-old age of I really don't want to hang out with you anyway.
Uh-huh. I get that.
Right.
Yep.
So that's when you're happy. That's when, so there's parents. So you were talking about, you know, diverting into other things. There's parents that once they have a child, they give up all of their hobbies and things that they do because their hobby becomes and their entire life becomes their child. And I always wonder what they do when they hit this age where a child says, okay, that's fine. I love you and go away because I want to be a little independent and do my own thing. Like, what do? If you've given up all the things that you used to do, right?
Right.
For me, I feel guilty for about 2 minutes and then I feel sad for about a minute because I feel shunned. And then I say, oh, I can do something I want and I don't have to feel guilty about it.
Yeah. So very true.
And thus ends our parenting segment. I'm still, go ahead. No, go ahead. Keep parenting. Keep going.
It's just the balance. Right. It all ends up balancing out.
Yeah. I think that's life. You know, you've got to find the balance for everything. Cause when you're too heavy in one area, it always seems to come back and bite you in the rear.
Yep. And everyone's balance point is different.
Yep. That's true.
Go ahead, Gary.
Now.
Take us back.
I think we're finished.
I'm learning things. So what triggers the, your needle pointing all along here while you're at the corporate world, I assume. What triggers the, I need to design stuff?
Yeah, not in corporate because that was all actually before the whole needlepoint thing started. So what was your question? I'm sorry.
Well, I'm just trying to.
I got distracted by the shiny object.
it'll happen. Yeah, well, I'm just curious about how it is you go from corporate work and graphic arts to needlepoint design. I mean, it just seems like such a leap that you know.
Well, on one hand I can see that. On the other, as a graphic designer, design is design, right? You have clients that say, you know, I want, you know, a logo and this is what I do, and you know, you're always working with somebody. And this is kind of it's like you're a problem solver, right? So a visual problem solver. So it's, you know, needlepoint designing is kind of the same thing. It's like, well, okay, so this time I get to pick the subject. You know, I can, you know, I have an obsession with snowman. So I was like, hey, I can do whatever I want. You know, it's the world is open. So it's kind of the same. you know, but different in the sense that I'm pleasing myself. Not that I don't want to make stitchers happy, because I certainly do. And sometimes I have people who say, hey, you did this. Can you maybe do this? And I'm like, sure. You know, I'm open to a lot of things. So, did I answer your question?
Well, sure.
Yes, and I think I was just about to ask, do you design mostly things that are of your own making and driven by what you want to do? Or do you find that you're designing towards what things end up being popular and what things people request?
For the most part, it's what's locked up in my head. Sometimes, inspiration comes from sort of everywhere and anywhere. And sometimes it's just having a conversation with somebody, because I can't seem to turn it off in my head. And I'll hear something that somebody says, and it's like, something starts percolating in there, and the next thing I know, I'm like, well, I'm getting out my sketchbook and writing. Sometimes I'll just like write words or write notes, or it could have been like a pattern that I saw on a scarf that I went, ooh, I really like those colors, So, but at the same time, for instance, I designed a Hanukkah house. So I have a series of little, I call them cottages. And I did one for Hanukkah, and I had someone email me, probably about 6 months ago, and said, hey, I did your Hanukkah house. I'm actually, over in England, but I have a shop that I buy stuff from in Boston. Could you, it's not Boston, I think it was Washington. She's like, would you consider doing a Passover house? And I said, sure, why not? So, that kind of came around. Well, oops, the Passover house isn't out yet. Oh. Newsflash, it's coming out in January. Oh, my secrets, they're out. So that's how that came about. And, we chatted back and forth with in between email and saying, so what is it that, what is it that you think is important? And then I actually, my best friend is Jewish, and I talked to her a bit and sat down and did that. So, so sometimes it comes from things like that. But, 99.9 of it is just, the whimsy in my head coming out. I think it's my alter ego,
I love the way you designers will have, like, I'm looking at your houses right now. You'll have this idea, just a general idea, like houses. And then all the things that you can do with a basic, front face of a house. And, right. And it's so much fun because of your Valentine house, and then an Easter one, and then a patriotic, and you start with a house, you got different, and they aren't all the same house either.
Right. That would be too boring.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotta mix them up a little bit. And there's more of those in my head that, still haven't come out. So.
Well, it's smart from a very, sort of analytical sales perspective too, because if people stitch one house and they like it, then they want to stitch another house. So doing series of things makes a lot of sense, because right. People like to do, they like collections of things.
True.
So if you do one, or like the snowmen are another good example. You do one, one is nice, but having three of them together is even better. So, it's a good way to sort of market things as well. You know, and it just makes sense, because if people enjoy doing one, they're going to want to continue that enjoyment by doing something else that's similar.
You hope so.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you right now, I could do pepperberry snowmen for the next 20 years. Holy smokes, that's a lot of snowmen.
Yeah, it's kind of sad, but you know, I have no idea. I've always loved snowmen. Frankly, I love Christmas. I love the holidays. I love Halloween. It's funny. Halloween is one of those things that shops, either their customers do it or they don't. It's that one that's just seems to sort of sit on the fence, and it's not like Christmas is, or
right.
But
we've talked to a bunch of people who've said that, you know, it depends on the area of the country that you're in, that you'll have different sales, different things will do well in different parts of the country.
That's very true. It's you know, when I get trunk shows back, it's always interesting to see, you know, what people in those areas, the different areas, are gravitate towards. So I think every place is different. I mean, like, you know, some places do tons of belts. I mean, I know that my friend in Massachusetts, they do tons of belts. And but, you know, other places are, you know, ornaments, or, you know, it is just kind of interesting.
Do you try and design for different parts of the country? Is that something you worry about, or is it just always what's in your head?
Nah, I can't worry about that.
Okay.
That would take way too many brain cells.
Oh, okay.
No, it just I no.
Okay. Just curious.
I don't know how to describe it. I don't know.
No, I think that's interesting. We, you know, artists that we talk to, we've talked to several of them now, and
yeah, maybe.
You all describe it in pretty much the same way. You just do it. It's in your head. It just falls out and ends up on a canvas.
Yeah.
And there's real no step-by-step explanation for it. It just happens. And I think that's,
yeah.
I think it's fun.
Well,
and to the rest of us, it just seems like this magical thing, you know, that's completely unattainable, because to all of us, there is, that doesn't happen.
Right.
No magical art things fall out of our heads onto canvas or paper or anything else. So,
you know, and that's the fun part. You know, I'll do something, and, you know, sometimes I start with a sketch. And usually that's the way it goes. And I scan it, and then I take it into Illustrator, and then start really sort of cleaning it up and moving things around and really refining it. But the fun stuff really, really starts happening when you put paint to it, because yeah, it just seems to come alive. And I know I'm on the right track when I start smiling in my head when I'm painting, because if I'm not smiling, I'm like, you know, this is, it's bad. You know, there are times when I've done things and I've been working on things and I'm like, this is just not right. This is not right. I'm not smiling. I'm not happy. And then sometimes I'll, you know, take that first canvas and I'll cover some stuff up and I'll go back and I'll change. And I'm like, ah, there it goes. So then I have to do yet another version so that I have a nice clean copy of it that doesn't have all the the mistakes in it. But yeah, it's kind of funny. I mean, you just start to get a feeling about it. And, you know, usually I'm pretty good about it, but you know, you never know. Sometimes I think that's the funny thing about this whole business, is some of the things that you create, you're just never really sure how they're going to be received. cute because, you know, you're stuck in your own, well, I should say me, I'm stuck in my own head, in my own little world. I feel like I'm in a bubble, right?
Right.
And then I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if this is going to be good or not. And then you put it out there and people like it and you go, okay. So, you know, that was good. But, yeah, there are those times when you do things and you're like, this didn't take me long enough. I'm not sure if it's good, if it's good enough. I mean, it didn't take forever. So, but sometimes the quick things, you know, the things that just come in and you can spit it out onto a canvas, you just never know. It's a crapshoot.
Yeah. Now, most of your stuff is relatively small. Is that intentional?
No, it's just, I think really timing, just because, I'm sort of it. I'm the bookkeeper. I'm the shipper. I'm the receiver. I'm the painter.
So you paint all of your canvases then, huh? You don't have them sent
Well,
out?
I only paint the original ones. I do send them off to a service, although I have to tell you, my first show, I had no idea that there was anything called a painting service. So it was a good thing that it was a June show. If it was a January show, I probably would have gone, oh, what have I done?
A show and then came back with orders that you had to paint?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Yeah. And at the same time, I was, you know, I had been introduced to a company that does painting and I was trying to get everything going with them. But, you know, it takes a while. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a good time. Oh. Yeah, but you know, I actually have a lot of larger pieces already designed and planned, and some of them I was supposed to get done for January, but you know, it just doesn't always work that everything gets done. But they should be, since I've already got them designed, I should be able to have them out in June. But I'm hoping to have three of the larger pieces done for January. They just won't be at the painting service yet. They'll just I'll show them and send them on their way after. So yeah. I'm going in that direction. But you know, I think the nice thing about some of the smaller things is they don't take forever.
Yeah.
You know, you can buy something and not be stitching on it for 9 months to a year.
Right.
But you know, a mix is good. Yeah. So
I like that your designs have areas of a color, so you can develop a stitch and you're not always compensating. You can or feel like you just have to do basket weave because nothing will fit in this space. And there's lots of larger areas. And
right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, as a stitcher, I usually try to keep that in mind. And, you know, if there's a really wonky small area that I've got, I try to see if I can't avoid it because, you know, I know that somebody's going to go, well, why did she do that? But, you know, I think needlepoint has just, you know, evolved through the years. I mean, there are, you know, you can have a lot of complicated illustrations and everything. But I think these days, it just seems like, you know, more and more designers are opening their designs up and having more space so that you can get creative with stitches and fibers and, you know, all kinds of fun stuff. So
yeah, well, we have so many threads, and I think we probably always had the stitches, but we're certainly aware of more stitches through books and all the online options
that,
it's almost a shame not to take advantage of that with a design.
You know, it's funny, I have this one canvas, and it was Well, it was actually in Needlepoint now, back in, I think it was the July, August issue. It was a patriotic love canvas. And it was really, really simple. And in my head, I could just see it. I could see it stitched. I mean, I wasn't, you know, picking stitches in my head, but sometimes less is more, because mm-hmm. you can do a lot with it. And so I called Timmy Schultz, who's done several of my stitch guides. And I'm like, okay, so I have this piece and I really want to see it stitched. So would you be interested in doing this? And she said, sure. So I sent it to her, and one day she calls me and she's like, oh, I'm having so much fun with this. But then she said, but I have to tell you that when I got it, I was like, this is really simple. I don't know. And, but sometimes simple just lets you have so much fun with, you know, the creative part of stitches and fibers and beads and everything else that, and it's an absolutely beautiful piece. She did a lovely job with the stitch guide and the finished pillow. So,
yeah. This stitch guide, you bring up the stitch guide thing. I think it's an interesting phenomenon. I mean, it's really taken hold to the point where it seems like if a canvas comes out, the first question that's asked in any forum is there a stitch guide for it? Do you try to have someone develop stitch guides for your patterns or your charts?
You know, not always. I think that sometimes I've been asked by people if they can do a stitch guide for a particular piece. And sometimes it's really when, like perhaps with the love canvas, I'm like, I really need to have a stitch guide for this one, because I can see it's so simple that, you know, I'm not sure that everybody will see, you know, the interest of it, if that mm-hmm. makes any sense.
Yeah, they're not going to see what you're seeing.
Right. So, but yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people do ask for stitch guides. And, you know, I think that, you know, just sometimes people need a jumping off point, whether they use the guide thoroughly as it is, or, you know, use some of the stitches and then do some of their own. I think, you know, that's what guides are meant to be. It's kind of a guide. It's like, well, you know, here's what I came up with, but, you know, everybody has their own sort of take on things. And, you know, I think it's fine to change, you know, stitches or fibers or what else. I mean, that's kind of the fun of it. But I think sometimes, you know, people get stuck and they need a little help. So I think, you know, there's a pretty broad range of stitchers out there. There's everything from people who have no idea what to put in a space to people, you know, in the middle that, you know, have some idea, but sometimes they just want a little guidance. And then there's a lot of people that don't want guides at all, because, you know, they, half of their fun is, you know, doing that and coming up with their own stitches. So they serve a purpose for sure.
Yeah. You know, some websites you can go to and there's just rows and rows and rows of stitch guides. And, I've never used one. I looked at one. I have a canvas and a stitch guide came with it, and it was whoever did it. It was just a bunch of pencil scratches on a copy of the canvas. And I thought, well, this is, I expected more sophistication. And, cause I assume that formerly produced stitch guides are pointing to areas and showing how to, you know, here's the stitch and where to start or something. I don't know what all goes into those things.
Right. I think, you know, generally speaking, most of them are like that way. And like, you know, you find them in Needlepoint now and that's the way they are. When you get that particular guide in your hand, they'll have the, you know, the nice computer illustrated piece of the stitch with the directions, and but I've never seen one included with a canvas that was that was really sounds like it was more of a rough.
I think it probably was, but yeah. Well, and that's just it. We don't think about in needlepoint now. Those are literally stitch guides and very formally put together and very neat and tidy. And when you have a piece in a magazine like Needlepoint now, do you I assume you have to jack up the number of canvases that you have available that takes right off?
Usually. I mean, and it depends. And sometimes you get, you know, that burst at the beginning, and then things trickle in, and then you get more bursts. It sort of depends, I think, on, you know, what people are really wanting to do, and you know, the holidays and everything else. There's a lot that plays into it, but you know, when those magazines are around for months, I mean, you can still have somebody call and say, "Oh, you know, I saw that in Needlepoint Now."
Yeah.
So it certainly does, you know, put things out there and make people certainly aware of things. So,
do snowmen sell better in the summer or the winter? Well, see, I always wonder about those holiday-oriented charts and patterns. Do people do them in the summer if they're a Christmas thing, so they have them for Christmas, or does the Christmas season, for example, inspire them to, oh, I got to do a Christmas thing? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's a mixture.
Oh, of course, it's a mixture. I want.
Yeah, there's no solid answer to that. But you know, I think a lot of times people are working towards getting things done by that finishing deadline, and then sometimes, you know, they like to stitch the same thing, the same kind of things during the season. So, you know, they have that sort of, I don't know, seasonal feeling, instead of, you know, it's Christmas and it's snowing and they're stitching Halloween. But yeah.
Well, it kind of makes sense. You want to stitch something Christmassy at Christmas, even though you know you're not going to finish it.
Right.
Yeah, right. That makes sense.
Yeah. So I think it's, I don't think there are any hard and fast rules about anything. Sorry, Gary.
Okay, fine. Jeez. You know, I wanted a Christmas in July thing that, you know, would be, oh, everybody's got to line up to do snowmen in July to have them ready for December.
You know, well, if it would keep them colder, I think they would, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I tried. You know, put me down for trying. Yep. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So do you get to stitch much yourself, or are you constantly designing and painting and doing trunk shows? Oh, yes, trunk shows. Talk about trunk shows. I find that a fascinating phenomenon. You have those going on all the time?
I do. This past year, I decided that I wasn't going to do any in December. Because it just gets to be way too crazy. It was funny. I was talking to a shop owner one day, and she, because there's, you know, there's all the good and bad, especially with all of the internet and everything else. She was telling me that it used to be that, you know, they brought trunk shows in as sort of a perk for their customers. You know, we'll bring this designer in and, you know, you get to see a good portion of their line and everything else. And now it's a lot more commonplace, and everybody has trunk shows, and they're all out there, kind of all over the place, and shops will advertise them, and you know, it's you know, there's really no solution because the internet is not going away.
No.
And yes, yeah, so the marketplace is flooded sort of with trunk shows, but it's really a great way, especially for me. I mean, I haven't been doing this long, and it's a great way to get exposure because, you know, there are a lot of people that still don't know that my company even exists. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, it's a lot of work to put one together, but on the other hand, or I should say on the other side, it's a lot of work for the shops to put them out there too, because, you know, there's, you know, just a lot to, you know, you've got to make sure that you've got everything that the designer said they sent, and, you know, pricing and everything else. So it's just work on both ends. I think it works out well for everybody. So, yeah, you know.
Yeah, we talked many weeks ago with Debbie Woodward at Painted Pony, and it sounded like it was a big part of her effort. She had somebody to help her to track all the trunk shows and where they're going and what goes out and what comes back. Seemed like it was almost a miniature warehousing effort just to manage all of that.
Yeah, trunk shows can take on a life all on their own because, you know, it is – It's a lot of work because you've got to pull all the canvases. You have to have, you know, make sure that you've inventoried everything and you know what you're sending. And the packing and it's yeah, which is, you know, it's a very time consuming thing, unfortunately, but yeah.
But effective marketing, right? I mean, it's
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
The personal stitching, you get to do any of that?
Oh, not so much.
There she pretty much answered that question with that great big pause, didn't she?
I think so.
Yep.
You know,
pretty much.
Big fat no. Yeah, I've stitched a few of my pieces. Maybe three.
Really? Oh my. Oh my.
Yeah. It's, you know, well, so truth be told, if I sit down with a canvas, I have a really hard time putting it away. So, you know, it's that obsession. It's like, well, you know, I'll just finish up this fiber and then I'll tuck the needle in and, well, now that I've finished it, I really should put another one in and anchor it in so that, you know, the needle isn't just floating around. And well, then yeah, maybe one row. I'll do one more row.
For everyone can identify with that.
Yeah, it's a problem. But, you know, it's also kind of the way I am with designing as well. I mean, I'll start something and I feel like I can't stop until I get it out of my head. So it's a, this obsession thing is a good and bad thing.
Yeah.
It's a, right. It's a useful thing.
I know there are a lot of designers out there that, take the time and stitch. And I was talking to one and I'm like, how do you do this? How do you stitch so much and design so much? And she was like, well, you know, I give myself an hour every morning. And I'm like, you're kidding me. Like, if I set an alarm, I don't think I would be able to get up and leave it. So, it's my own issue that I've got to overcome. But yeah, one of these days I keep thinking, you know, I really do need to figure out what way it will work for me so I can go back and stitch some more as well. Cause I really enjoy it and I do miss it, but
yeah. See, I would think that you would just be dying when you come up with a new canvas, just be dying to stitch it just to see what it's like.
Yeah. Well,
Not so much.
Sometimes,
eh?
well, you know, yes and no. I'm probably one of those people that will I'll look at the canvas and I'll go, well, I could do this, or I could do that, or I could do this, I could do that. Oh my gosh, which one do I do?
Yeah.
You know,
and that's paralyzing.
I ponder over it way too much. So I let the professionals do it.
Do you normally have somebody stitch each one of yours? Do you have people that stitch a model for you?
No.
You just crank out canvases. Okay.
Sometimes, like I said, like I will ask people and say, okay, I really need to see this one stitched. And sometimes, you know, I'll get a call and say, hey, do you, is there anything that you, you know, you think you want to have stitched? And, cause I get so sort of tied up in my own little world of, okay, so I've got this and I've got five more sitting on the corner of my desk that I've already got designed. And, you know, it's just, well, I want to do that one.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the stitching thing. I want to paint that one.
Uh-huh.
So.
Do you get followers? You must get followers, people who are just obsessed with your designs and want every one of them.
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I do have quite a few people that, you know, like certain things, like the cottages or the snowmen, and and you know, it's nice to know that you know, people are out there and they do like, you know, seven of the pieces or whatever, and they feel like they just have to stitch them or
I mean, I could see somebody wanting to have all of your snowmen made into ornaments or, you know, stand-ups or something for a Christmas display. I mean, I could see that easily.
Mm-hmm. That right. Would, yeah. I know there was, I can't remember who she was, but there was someone who had posted on Facebook. I think she did every one of those brightly colored, the large, they're like 8 by 9 inch snowmen. And she had done all her own stitches and she had them all finished into pillows. And,
oh, wow.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It was nice. So I really do get a kick out of, seeing what people come up with. You know, I guess in some sense I live vicariously through seeing what people have stitched, and you know, and I love hearing that. Sometimes I'll get people saying, oh, it just made me smile, and I'm like, oh, that's all I want. That's perfect, because that's, you know, that's, I guess, my goal, you know.
Yeah.
If you look at it and it makes you smile and it makes you happy, that's, I think that's kind of just my design style. I like to make people smile or laugh. I love it when they look at something and they start laughing. Sometimes it takes them a little while. I have this one that they were in my booth looking at. It's a really simple ornament, and it says, it's got ho, and then it's got a three. It's ho to the third.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, ho to the third. And she had to think, and she's like, oh, I get it. That was funny. I'm like, yeah.
Now, see, that's I'm not a painted canvas person, but that's one that, yeah, that's the top of my list to do, because I just love the whole cubed. But you're the one that came up with that originally?
Are there more than that one out there?
Oh, okay. I don't know. I've just seen that one, and that's the one.
Yeah,
that...
I haven't seen any other ones like that, but. You know, it's it wouldn't be uncommon. I think, you know, it's, there's only so many, I guess, not ideas, but, you know, like snowmen. I mean, it's a category, and we all, you know, a lot of us do snowmen. You know, to see somebody do snowmen with red and white striped scarves, probably there are a lot of them out there. Do you know what I mean? It's you know, I'm sure if somebody else did a Ho cube, that it was probably a much different interpretation of it. But that was, well, I have to tell you a funny story about this, because you know, you were teasing me earlier that this isn't rocket science. Well, that's kind of what my dad does. So I had showed it to him, and he was like, he's like, "Diane, you know that's wrong, right?" And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And he's like, "Well, technically you have an H and an O, that's, you have the O that's cubed, because if mm-hmm. you wanted the Ho to be cubed, you needed to put parentheses around it." And I'm like,
"Engineers.
Okay, Dad, this is artistic's license here, right? So get out of the math." Oh, it made me laugh. I'm like, yeah, only my dad would point that out to me.
Yeah, I'd have just taken my camera. So walk out of the room, leave me alone. But he's right.
But, yeah. Technically, yeah. He's right, but you know.
But that just sucks the fun that. Right out of it. That just come on.
Yeah, that was kind of a fun sucking moment.
But you know, that's why I did it. That's
probably
where engineers and scientists get joy, is out of
that's
pointing
right.
out the skills of others.
That's yeah. right. They like to point out when people are wrong.
Yes.
Oh man! Now see that's just okay.
Tell me it's wrong. Don't disagree with me, Gary.
No. But see now seeing, I thought that was so creative, but now he's right, and so now.
So I ruined it for you.
Yeah. Probably not enough that I won't stitch it, but still, yeah.
You can add the parentheses if you want to, and then then the world will be fine.
That's right. Any yes. mathematician that you know will say that is correct.
Yes.
Right. It's all fixable.
I saw a canvas, a design the other day. I don't know if it was a canvas or whatever, but it was a musical thing. And so it was a quarter, a one count, like one count quarter rest signature or sign with a fermata over the top, which it musically means rest, no sound for this one count. And then the fermata means until the director tells you to move on. And so mm-hmm. it's basically, and the person said, so basically what it says is shut up. You know, just, I thought that was,
excellent.
Yeah. Cause you would never have a fermata over a rest. You'd have it over a chord. Yeah. I thought, okay. Awesome. That was, Got to do that.
That's
yeah.
Only
that
the musically
witty.
Inclined would understand.
Right.
That.
Right. That's just it. Yeah.
To read music to get that joke. I like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's funny.
Yep. Okay, so now I got to buy your canvas and put parentheses in. All right, thanks a lot to your dad. Yep, great.
I'll let him know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, I love that. Mm-hmm. All right, well, there we have it right there. I think that's going to be it right there. We're going to end on whole cube with parentheses.
Mm-hmm. My incorrect ruined canvas.
Yes, that's going to be it. Diane, really been a treat. Thanks for taking time
Thank
with
you.
Us and
absolutely. Well, this has been fun.
Yeah,
I've enjoyed talking with you.
Really appreciate it. And with that, we'll end it. And thanks for listening. And Christine and I will be back on Wednesday.